we've been forced to stay in or go indoors and then stay indoors, and that's the metaphor, isn't it? And that is our fear, isn't it? What's in the room that we haven't been in for a long time? Is it? And I think what we're scared of is sadness, mm. and pain and vulnerability and grief, probably grief for the things that we've left behind, the things that we thought we were going to do but we didn't do. All that stuff is in there. It's in that dark and dusty room. A lot of people think, oh, I'd just love to have more time. I'd love to be relaxed. I'd love to be more open. Most people, our lives are quite tight. In normal times, it's like we don't experience significant pain and don't experience significant joy. So it's almost in the nervous system, it's kind of frozen. But you can imagine it as like ice. And when you go to a space, the kind of spaces that you create and we create, where you're allowing people to be more vulnerable and relax and do interesting exercises where people can get into that, then it starts to melt the ice. And as the ice melts, it actually goes both ways. So it means the pain, some memories might arise, and you might kind of feel some pain. So there's a lot of tears on a retreat, but also it's the other way, where because the water's now flowing, there's the joy. There's the joy you haven't felt for years, and there's the laughter and the giggling, the insane giggling. And I love the thing, because, you know, sometimes tears and the laughing and the crying sound quite similar.
Welcome to the Happy Entrepreneur Podcast. This is a podcast for people who look at business differently. It's for founders, freelancers, change makers, and freedom seekers who want to make money, do good, and be happy. We choose the path of the happy entrepreneur not to get rich, but to express ourselves and serve others in the most authentic way we can. Many of us couldn't find our role by working for others, and so we chose to work for ourselves. We took the more uncertain path, not because we wanted to, but because we needed to. We value learning, play, and friendship, and we have a need to make a meaningful impact in the world. By following the path of the happy entrepreneur, we learn as much about ourselves as we do about business. On this podcast, I have conversations with other happy entrepreneurs from different walks of life, industries, and countries. We talk about the journey and about what we learn about ourselves along the way. For us, entrepreneurship isn't just a way to make money, but a journey of self-discovery and growth. If you're on the same path and are looking for inspiration and connection, then this podcast is for you. In this episode of the podcast, we're in conversation with John Parkin, the author of Fuck It, The Ultimate Spiritual Way. We hear about his journey of self-healing and how saying fuck it was core to it. It's about not holding on so tightly to ideas and concepts and being more aware of the unfair expectations we place on ourselves, situations, or events. When it comes to saying fuck it to fear, John talks about accepting the feelings rather than pushing them away. He says, we're scared of sadness, pain, vulnerability, and grief. In normal times, we're all too busy and we don't experience significant pain or joy, and so the nervous system is almost frozen. But when you allow people to be more vulnerable and relax, the ice starts to melt and they get to feel that pain and joy again. There are so many gems in this episode, and so if you struggle with dealing with the highs and lows of the entrepreneurial journey, then listen on and learn how the fuck it way can show you the path forward.
Just past the turn of the century, I with my wife were working in the advertising industry, but we were both into things like, well, therapy, Qigong, Tai Chi, etc. And we decided to pack everything up and go to Italy. So that's why we keep talking about Italy. So we were crazy. We borrowed lots of money. We borrowed back then £1 million and bought a big hill with two houses on it, well, two wrecks on it, and renovated the place and put a pool on there. And with our kids, where we had twins, we have twins, but then they were like 1 year old. And so we went to Italy, and we left our jobs, went to Italy, got really stressed. And one of the key reasons we were going was that I wasn't very well. I was chronically unwell, and I thought having a really relaxed life in the sunshine would make me better, doing meditation and qigong every day and just being there in the hills saying om. I thought that would kind of heal me, with may also with the sunshine. And so we left. We opened this place in 2004, so after two years of madness. And that first summer was also madness. You can imagine, it's everything that they show you on the TV programs when people leave and they go and set something up. I've watched those programs, but I still ignored them. I don't know, it's just an insanity to us that kind of persists through all common sense sometimes. And that was us, really, with our two young kids pouring all this money into the thing, and then having these retreats where we'd teach meditation and qigong, and there'd be people teaching yoga as well, so yoga weeks. And I got more ill. So I got really sick at one point, but I was getting more sick. And at the end of that summer, so September, I remember going, we lived in the guest house that we'd done, we lived in the ground floor. So I remember going from the bedroom into the bathroom, and I felt really not very well. My skin wasn't good. I got asthma. I was just like not feeling great, felt really sick. And I went to the bathroom, I looked in the mirror, and I went, what, what have we done here? What's the point? I came here to get better. We've come, we've done all this, we've spent all that money, borrowed all that money, done all this stuff. And here we are, and I'm even more ill now. What a waste of, I was kind of despairing, really. And then I thought, well, we live in a nice place. It's sunny almost every day. We're in the hills, got a beautiful family, lovely wife, the boys are just fantastic. I get to sit and do qigong quite a lot of time still, even though there's all the other stuff around it. It's not that bad. In fact, it's pretty good. Sure, I'm not well, but I'm okay a lot of the time. I'm not completely healed. I'm not completely well. And I basically said, fuck it. This is how it is, really. This is how I am. This is how it is. Just accept it. Maybe you're never going to get better like you imagine you get better and be fully, fully healed and well and fully alive. Rather than feeling tired and sick, which is how I was feeling. And I really said, fuck it to that thought of being well. And within 2 weeks, I was feeling significantly better. And within 6 months, I was the most healthy I'd been probably in 20 years, since my teen years. And just felt really fantastic. So the summer afterwards, I just felt a sense of life and just an energy and a life, a kind of a sense of liberty that I'd never felt before, really. And it was coming from this thing of kind of, it does not matter so much. I don't need to be fully well. I don't need to be that. I don't need to be successful. I don't need to kind of tick all those boxes that have been made for me. So fuck it. And we then started to teach fuck it. We taught a retreat called fuck it, and off we went. So that's the bit where it kind of things changed for me, and that's when fuck it was born, really. So 15 years ago.
Now that's a journey. There's a lot there I think we can probably dive into. It sounds like the core of it, the way I hear it, is this idea of just acceptance. It feels like there's a basis of that in kind of spiritual teachings. Was that part of, you say you did qigong and you're doing retreats. It sounds like there's knowing that stuff, but at some point just having to say it to yourself was a different stage of that journey.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's, I read a lot. I've learned about Taoism and Buddhism. Read tons of stuff, practiced meditation for 10 years. In the 90s, I was doing Tai Chi or Qigong meditation for 2 hours a day whilst I was, first thing in the morning meditating. So I was doing everything and every kind of therapy to try and get better and to try and feel okay. And I kind of recognized very young, so I've been doing Qigong since I was 21, I think, I recognized very early on that relaxation was really important for me, that being sick created stress, but also stress created or exacerbated the illness. So I spent a lot of time learning how to relax and then teaching other people. And yeah, so the ideas of letting go and accepting things as they are and giving up on, so they were intellectual, they were ideas, and I'd feel some of it in the practice. But sometimes it just takes life to, or either timed for you to learn this stuff deeply, for it to kind of embody or to end life, whatever the word is, when it goes into your life. So it's time sometimes, I think. We can really learn things here, then it takes a while to go down here. But sometimes it's life that does it. It's life that kicks you, and then you kind of go. And so that really wasn't that moment. And it's interesting. We're talking about this now during these tough times. And I think life has been pushing us, kicking us, you know, flicking us, inviting us in a thousand different ways in the last 2-3 months as well.
That's that thing now at the moment, is you're bringing it to the present. There's a lot that I see people not accepting, and because of that getting stressed big time.
It's really interesting now, isn't it? And we've been running a it's called Tough Times Therapy, which is a group we opened to do once a week about 8 weeks ago, actually. So it's a closed group. So it started 8 weeks ago, so closed then. So we've been concentrating on that. We've had this group that we've been doing every week. And I've really noticed the huge difference. I don't know whether it's because of what we've been teaching, or it's just a general, I think it's a general vibe as well, that it's really changed how people are over time. And yeah, at the beginning, because we do a lot of sharing in these groups, at the beginning, people were really stressed and anxious and uncertain and some panicky and scared and grieving, you know, the kind of grieving the fact that normal life had just disappeared pretty much overnight. One thing to say is I spent the first few weeks saying at the beginning of each session, it's affecting us all very differently, even if there's one thing out there, which is a pandemic. We've all got different responses, and it's affecting us in very different ways, financially or health or whatever it is. So I felt I really had to say that at the beginning of each session for at least a month, as I don't know whether you've found yourself saying it, because you can't just say this is shit, it's awful. No. It's the worst thing ever. And you can't say this is great because I'm on holiday for 3 months. You know, you can't give one thing, because we're all so, you can't say, oh, it's great, at least the government's supporting us. No, the government's not fucking supporting me. You know, so you don't, there's no, so there has, but what there is now from being that and being the, what there has been, we did a session a couple of nights ago. And when we were looking at insights from this thing, and everybody was, you could tell everybody's a lot calmer. They're saying, you know, what it's taught me, what I've seen is that I'm more resilient. I'm better with uncertainty than I thought. I am more accepting. And then other people can, you know, I realize that I get angry. I realize that this, I'm still not accepting of certain things, but I'm different to how I was 6 weeks ago. How are you? How are you two?
Surviving.
Yeah.
Well, I think of we had a webinar a couple of weeks ago with Chris Keasley about the grief model, and she talked a bit about this stuff of the cycle that we go through. I think I've kind of done it in reverse, almost like starting off with acceptance, just okay, it is what it is, and going backwards to now feeling a bit sad. Which is weird, but I think it's, I don't know, I guess as an entrepreneur you learn to adapt quite quickly to things and just deal with it, but then you don't necessarily think of the repercussions of it off the bat, or me certainly. So yeah, that's been interesting to see how that has been for me. And then maybe, like you said, trying to support other people has been our first sort of thought, really, through this time.
Definitely resonated when you were talking about how, well, what I heard was how different people
react to this situation. And it's so I found it really curious, interesting, enraging, triggering, just seeing how people basically what people would say about what's going on, whether it's like, yeah, it's all good, you know, great holiday, like you said. And then from that, when I hear something like that, thinking like, well, what about all the people who aren't having a great time?
Yeah.
What does that mean for them? And then seeing my reaction, thinking, why am I getting angry now? But I was talking to someone, I was exchanging some messages with someone actually a couple of days ago. One of the things that I found in myself is like, it's released this need to think about what's going to happen next, because there's no one knows what's going to happen next. So it's kind of like, yeah, cool. Okay. Actually, I can accept uncertainty even more, because everyone's going to have to accept uncertainty, because there's no one who knows really whether how this all pans out. So I have permission to say fuck it to the future.
Yeah, I think I definitely haven't felt as present as I have done the last couple of months. You know, just been, like you said, just focused on, I think of like on a good holiday, you just think of the next meal, you know, or the next drink. And that's kind of for me about, just stopping and pausing. And the last couple of months has been looking forward to the next thing and or this thing that I'm eating now or doing now, rather than planning for the weekend, planning for a holiday, planning for the future, which might not happen. So like you said, it takes away some of that. In some ways, takes away that cognitive load, really, and just means that you can focus on here and now.
It's interesting. I have that too. And what you say about cognitive load, I'm aware that right at the beginning or coming into the lockdown, so the, you know, we were quite tuned into what was happening in Italy, of course. Well, our boys were actually in Italy right at the beginning as it was starting to spread there. So our now 18-year-old boys. And I spent the first, I don't know how long, certainly first few weeks, first of all, doing what a lot of people were doing, which was filling my head with information about what was going on, what the likelihood of this, what the figures, learning, you know, stat. I've never been exposed to so many stats at the beginning and so much news about this and that. And I was aware, I was trying to figure it out. I was trying to figure out how this could affect us all, how it could affect our businesses and the economy, how it would affect us emotionally, how it would affect me. But you can only take so much of that when it's almost impossible to figure it out. So I think there's some level of acceptance, calmness, or day-to-day thing has kind of dropped onto many of us, which is it's kind of beautiful, really. And I never thought I'd be this good with this level of uncertainty. But it is a kind of,
I think that's. Oh, God, sorry. I was just going to say.
Oh, just a quick one. I was going to say, for anyone watching or listening, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you with uncertainty at the moment? 10 being saying I'm in the present all the time, and 1 that's you're kicking and screaming every single day, saying, "Please give me some certainty." So, love to hear how where people are at. Go for it, lads.
It probably changes by the minute if it's me. Same with how are you feeling about everything? Great and shit and sad and happy all at the same time, or certainly within the same day.
It's an acceleration of emotional. The emotional range is greater and the movement through it is accelerated, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, I remember when I first read your book years ago, I was thinking about what I took from it. And I think just focusing on the attention part, like what you pay attention to, or paying attention to what you pay attention to, means... Yeah. That you might end up not getting the results you're looking for. So I think if you talk about fuck it to Corona or lockdown or food or whatever the thing is you're trying to achieve, it feels like when you were ill, trying to get better actually wasn't the right focus for your attention. Is that right? It's almost just letting go of that in itself helped you find the thing you wanted.
It helped me get better. And that's a very Zen thing, isn't it? When you stop going for something, it arrives. And it's very difficult to understand. It's not something you can easily practice. I think an element, and it's really hard to find rules in it as well, but I think an element of success, well, a contribution to success in almost anything is the ability both to focus and work hard and bring all the energy of everything into it and have a clear focus but also to let go at the same time of your attachment to it. And that's really, really difficult to do. That seems to be a quality of successful manifestation of good stuff. Mm. The ability to kind of have a sense of what you want, so the wanting of it, letting go to some degree of how you're going to get there, but still working hard, but also trusting. You know, we work hard. I'm working hard through this. I'm working very hard, even though I don't know where it's ending up. But I've got a different level of trust to before. So that thing of attention without the kind of, it's like attention, but with a wider vision, isn't it?
Yeah. And with the stuff you're working, I'd love to know, is that just stuff you'd planned before? Or I just know with us, like, we've just followed what we got energy and time for, given, you know, homeschooling and just limited bandwidth.
Yeah, it's, well, first of all, a lot of our business is live. It's retreats and events. Yeah. That's either diminished or disappearing. So we had to work out how to face that. So for us, it's doing things like this tough times therapy we've done. So doing some more stuff online. And a lot of it is thinking about, well, I've done a lot of learning. I've gone back to learning quite a lot of stuff. So I'm doing a lot of kind of investment in timeless learning, new stuff, learning how to do new things. And also, and this is really, this almost came out coincidentally, going back, it's interesting that, because I told the story about how I said, fuck it, originally, going back to why, what is the passion at the heart of this thing? Because we've been teaching fuck it for 15 years, we've written 6 books and run dozens of retreats, you know, and it's funny when you have something for creative people like us and many listeners, like most people that were trying to do things that are creative, the temptation is to constantly change and constantly move on and constantly change the thing. And kind of, entrepreneurs will tend to move from one thing to another. And that's my kind of default, really. But to be within something and evolve it over time is really an interesting challenge. I'm connecting with what the amazingness of fuck it at the moment. And it's like, why were we doing it? What was that feeling? The feeling I described at that first summer of kind of going, God, we can do anything. This is amazing. It doesn't matter what people think. I don't care about achieving this or earning that. I just want to, that sense of letting go of things and just doing more what you fancy. So connecting with that again and seeing where that takes us. And it's taking so far, this room here is, I've got like must about 100 pieces of paper on the walls, you know, with just ideas for things, lots of ideas for new things. So it's an incredibly creative time for me at the moment. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying the chaos of it.
Nice, in the messy bit.
The messy bit. I tidy up my desk, but the rest of it just gets messier and messier. And the messiness of it, I like not knowing. I like the not having. That's the good thing about this crisis. And we do have to say that, of course, there are many people that are struggling, and there are many people that are sick as well or are vulnerable. And of course, whenever I'm talking about some of the positive aspects of it, I'm always bearing that in mind. But there are some really positive aspects for me in here, of kind of going back in and learning this and learning that. And it's been a very, informative experience so far.
Yeah. The word that springs to mind when you're talking there is, freedom.
Yeah.
A real sense of freedom. And then I was going to say the opposite to that, or the thing that stops us from feeling free is this idea of this fear and what that's doing to people, and whether it's during this crisis or even before when people were trying to make things happen. There's something about fear that stops us from acting. And given there's this conversation started around the idea of saying fuck it and fuck it. When we first talked, we were proposing the idea of calling it fuck it saying fuck it to fear. But then you reframed it because it was something around saying fuck it and feel the fear. And so it'd be interesting to basically, well, it would be nice to dive into that a bit more, because one of the things that springs to mind, again, another conversation I had yesterday, is like a unique advantage that people are going to have is if they're able to manage this fear, that is the advantage that they're going to have over other people during this time of uncertainty. Someone even said during disruptive times, there are a lot of opportunities, but I think you don't spot them if you're scared.
Yeah, it's true. This is one interesting thing is I think we can't really remember. It's not easy to remember what we were like before. It's not easy to remember the anxieties we had before. We kind of almost assume now that we've only been anxious, scared, uncertain, and everything else during this period. It's easy to think that. It's hard to remember what it was like before. And a good exercise is to go back to what we might have been thinking a year ago or 6 months ago or something. And most of us were feeling this is an exaggeration of everything, isn't it? It's an exaggeration of the uncertainty. But it was all there all along. There were always things we were anxious about, always things we were scared about. So it's an incredible training exercise, really. And I suppose, yes, if we're able to face the fear and develop certain skills or just allow certain skills to kind of happen and appear during this time, it's amazing. They're going to be amazing abilities for after. Because I suppose the fear thing, I'm just thinking about it in business terms. If you're able to face fear head on or face the difficulties head on, it's a great barrier to entry because most people can't. And I think a lot of us are looking for barriers. I'm always quite happy when it's taken me shitloads of time to learn something. It's like, well, it's taken me 3 months to learn that, but at least that's a good barrier to entry. I don't know whether anybody else could stay up all night doing this. And I think the ability in a business to actually really face things head on, face the facts, which is what many people and businesses are having to do now, the facts or the uncertainty of the facts. But it's like, what do we do now? And it's a particular thing. It's usually not as bad as you think it is when you face it, to kind of step in, to breathe and to step in and to look at it and then to take it. So there's certain things that can help us do the facing fear thing, aren't there? There can be kind of key tips for it. But it's essentially saying fuck it, which is the kind of fuck it to the it's going to be horrible. It's going to be awful. I'm going to fall apart. I'm going to die. The world is. It's all It's saying fuck it to the potential for those feelings and stepping into it. And my experience, having faced lots of scary things in my life, is yes, there's some scary stuff on the other side, but it's usually not as bad as you think. And some of those ideas of how to do it really help. The idea of step by step, day by day, just try this bit, just do that, and then keep doing that really help.
Really got a couple of comments around the idea of fear being this signal or something within the fear that you can create something positive from it.
Yeah.
I'm curious around the kind of a nuanced aspect around this idea of fear, where, you know, how you react to it is kind of maybe based on some instinctive pre-programmed conditioning, whether you run away from it or run towards it. Because some things I kind of believe you shouldn't run towards, even if you're scared of them, like a cliff. But at the same time, it's like, it sounds like having a bit more of a conscious awareness of why you've got that reaction and responding better to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, once we get into the depth of the fear thing, you're right. I mean, they're going to be, first of all, fear is like stress. Stress and fear are very good signals. So we should not try to dampen our responses to stress. If we get very, very, very good if there's any moment of stress, we are very good at relaxing. If you're incredibly good at meditating and calming your nervous system down, it can be counterproductive or counter-survival, actually. So fear can be entirely debilitating, of course, like stress can be. And we can be scared about things that don't actually have a great threat to us. But it is a signal. So our conscious, as you say, Carlos, the conscious response to it is to work out what the signal means. Is the signal a good signal? Is it our system playing up? Is it just I have a habit of anxiety? Or is there something to really listen to here? And if there's something to really listen to, so there's good reason to be anxious for most people and fearful at the moment, whether it's with health or whether it's with the economy or people's pension plans or their jobs or their businesses and everything else. There's a lot of reason to be for that response to come in, the stress, fearful response. And then, as you say, yeah, we have our histories. My history is that my mum is very, very scared of stuff, but would never face it. And so would always kind of try to walk away from it and try to bury her head in the sand and try to just be peaceful and not really face it. So that's why I tend to be more. So there'll be part of that in me, which is, oh, no, I don't want to. So fucking go and do it. Just go in there and look at it. Look at it in the eyes. But as you say, there is the survival thing as well. So the survival, if there's a genuine fear, there's the fight, flight, or freeze. Those are the three responses. Sorry, Lauren.
I was about to say, was she happy for you to take the risks, i.e. live her life through you?
I'll ask her when I speak to her this weekend. I don't know whether she'd even understand the conversation, actually. The talking about it doesn't really register a lot of the conversations I might have about consciousness.
Okay. I suppose, I mean, in terms, like, my parents were great, happy to say, you should go do that. You should go take this risk. You should, even though they never would ever do it themselves.
No. I know my parents would not say, go and do it. Okay. They'd be sitting there praying while I was doing it.
That's interesting, that aspect of, those are those early beliefs, those early behaviors, habits that we've created that we didn't realize many of us might not even realize where they come from. And even you talking about your mother and Lawrence talking about his parents, one of the things I've learned from my father was the idea of risk, you know, trying to avoid risk. And there were really rational, very also, you know, very true stories that he had around what could happen if you took too many risks. And so that then just creates one way of looking at the world. And I think part of, I understand your work and what we're moving into at the Happy Startup School is, how do you break that open a bit to make sure that it isn't just a myopic filter?
You're exactly right. It's there are no rules for it, are there? There's no, because I mean, the day, yes, as you say, we my wife is a therapist, kind of the therapy side of fuck it, Gaia does, and she does a lot of work around the adaptive mechanisms that we develop as children. So when between the ages of, well, being born and 6 or 7, if we don't get certain things, if we don't get certain needs fulfilled, if we're not loved in a certain way, we adapt to get it. So a people pleaser is a good example, because we'd learn to be, that we have to do certain things and say certain things to be loved. And then we carry these mechanisms into adult life with us. So we come into every moment with a vast amount of prejudice, really. It's prejudice genetically, prejudice from our learning, prejudice from our own experience. So my experience of my approach to risk now is basically informed by my parents and what I've experienced in life. I've been one that went out and borrowed £1 million and moved to Italy, and there's certain consequences in that. So I've got a more developed view of it. But the so all these things coming out, our adapted ways, our what we picked up, what we've learned, what we understand about how the risk can be and what's happening now, it's like, God, I didn't imagine this bit could happen. I thought our business was diversified. I thought it was good to have that amount of money in the bank. I thought that was at least was certain, but this really does throw everything open. I can't. So I go back to something which is kind of in the Qigong and the Tai Chi, which is, what is this? What is this situation, and what does this situation require? You know, what's the need that needs to be fulfilled here? What's required now? There's no rules to that, and there might be some intellectual learning that informs one's response to that, But often, hopefully, it comes from a more instinctive, intuitive place. But it's like, and that means you could change every single day. You can have the same situation every single day. You cross the road and some, I don't know, I'm thinking about a Good Samaritan situation. Somebody's being mugged. And depending on what the chi is, you would do different things dependent on what feels right in this moment now, even if most of the external stuff, objective stuff, seems the same. And so that intuitive response to things, which is then a massive mixture, feels really important. And I feel that and experience it as energy. So I will ask, what's the energy? What's the chi of this? And then like doing a kind of like a Tai Chi move, you're kind of waiting for the moment. And then it's like, okay, now's the moment. And then you move through it. And this is these times are a great test of this, or a great invitation to play with this.
I hear something around there about there's this self-awareness part, you know, what is the energy within you, and how that matches with what's going around you. I'm curious about, you know, when you, it feels like a practice, this, you know, isn't something you can just pick up a book and 2 hours later, all right, I know what the energy, I can regulate the thermostat in my body now, so I know what's going on.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a power, if you can sort of take on that practice, that allows you to adapt better.
I think absolutely, you become agile. The practice is, I think people who practice meditation or they practice things like Qigong and Tai Chi will develop this naturally. But we're mainly talking about, yeah, consciousness, self-consciousness. It starts with, doesn't it, which is being aware of how I am, being aware of what's going on, which is why, I mean, especially at the beginning, these were so difficult times, because if you're self-conscious, if you're aware of yourself in these times, it's like, fuck, I feel so angry. I feel so peaceful. I'm all over the place. I'm about to have a nervous breakdown. I've never felt so happy in my life. It's like, what? Just that's just the last hour. So if you don't dampen it all down and just, you know, drink too much, eat too much, watch too much television, not think about it, it's like, whoa. But that practice of being there, if you can be there, and there's the kind of the face it thing, the face what's there, then it's a great practice for yourself. But then you can start to point, like anything, you can start to point it outside. If I practice non-judgment inside, so I kind of go, okay, so I'm upset, so I'm angry, so I get angry, so I'm a bit critical sometimes. That's kind of more of a self-acceptance. I naturally, after a while, start pointing that out. So I look out through the eyes that I've been looking in at the beginning. So most, I mean, I suppose progress for most of us is we're only looking out and judging and doing all our things without any conscious process, looking out unconsciously, really. And then we go to the inner process, which is looking in and becoming more conscious and more aware, more open and more accepting. And then we start to look out again as the third stage through those eyes, more conscious, aware, more accepting. Yeah.
There's a thing about looking in is that you need to stop doing stuff in order to actually look inside. But it feels, you know, and I've had a number of conversations around this, that there's a fear of stopping doing because of what you might find.
Yeah.
And how you deal with that and how you cope with that. And as soon as it feels awkward, you start doing something else.
Yeah, these times must have been a great challenge to many people, I think. Not necessarily because of their anxiety about the situation. Maybe somebody's on furlough and they've got a lot more time. Again, I know that doesn't apply to everybody who's been furloughed. But let's say they've got a lot more time for the first time in years, maybe all their lives. And most people are trying not to look at themselves. Most people live in big cities, entirely distracted. Most people, a lot of people who work incredibly hard, who then socialize incredible, do sport, whatever it is, fill their lives. When we fill our lives up, with stuff and jobs and ambitions and distractions, there's a reason we're not being still and going in. So, you know, I think probably cities are largely created to stop us going inside. This is what I'd argue when I lived in the countryside anyway. I'm back in a city now and enjoying it. Well, I was enjoying it before it all closed down. Many of the reasons we came back to England and to Brighton have all been shut down.
You're jinxed. Go back home.
Yeah, really. Sorry. We brought the sunshine, though.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah,
nice. Okay. That whole idea of looking inwards has just given me a whole new perspective about staying inside or staying indoors.
Yeah. We've been forced to stay in or go indoors and then stay indoors. And that's the metaphor, isn't it? Many of us are being forced to stay indoors.
We've all been sent to our room.
Yes.
And that feels naughty. Been
clean for a long time.
Yeah, and there's no internet and there's nothing to do.
No.
And you've got to think about what you've done.
Yeah.
You naughty people.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. And that is our fear, isn't it? What's in the room that we haven't been in for a long time? Is it? And I think what we're scared of is sadness and pain and vulnerability and grief, probably grief for the things that we've left behind, the things that we thought we were going to do, but we didn't do. All that stuff is in there. It's in that dark and dusty room.
Yeah. Basically our thoughts are the hardest thing to face up to, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about you, because you obviously run retreats and have done for years and create those spaces where people are encouraged to reflect, and even just the environment, I'm guessing, encourages that. Same with us, the sort of events we run that. But often people come for one thing and get something else. Did you find that people... And maybe it's the same with this, is like they came, or they're dealing with something in one way, but actually something pops up in their head, or a thought or a situation scenario pops in their head, and they're like, oh, I can't. It's like being forced to look at something that maybe is not that comfortable.
Almost always, yeah. Almost always. I think, and that's why a lot of people think, oh, I'd just love to have more time. I'd love to be relaxed. I'd love to be more open. Most people, our lives are quite tight. In normal times, it's like we don't experience significant pain and don't experience significant joy. So it's almost in the nervous system, it's kind of frozen. But you can imagine it as like ice. And when you go to a space, the kind of spaces that you create and we create, where you're allowing people to be more vulnerable and relax and do interesting exercises where people can get into that, then it starts to melt the ice. And as the ice melts, it actually goes both ways. So it means the pain, some memories might arise, and you might kind of feel some pain, so there's a lot of tears on a retreat. But also it's the other way, where because the water's now flowing, there's the joy. There's the joy you haven't felt for years, and there's the laughter and the giggling, the insane giggling. And I love the thing, because, you know, sometimes tears and the laughing and the crying sound quite similar.
Mm.
Yeah. And yeah.
Opening yourself up to life's emotions, it feels like, rather than just living it on maybe not autopilot, maybe a bit harsh, but yeah, you're kind of suppressing the highs and the lows.
That's right. And the same with fear, yeah. Sorry,
Carl. I was going to say, there's something around, I think it's fine to say, Lawrence, autopilot. There's a habitual way you live your life. And when you're talking about the highs and the lows, it's about the way I interpret it. It's about feeling life.
Yeah.
And when you're frozen, you're not necessarily feeling. And I think that, for me, that relates to your perception of time. Because one of the things, I don't know if you found this, but one of the things that we observe every single retreat is that within the first 8 hours, maybe even 24 hours, it feels like you've been there a week. Because every single moment, you're feeling something new. While maybe you're at home and you're doing the same thing, and you find yourself, wow, it's already May, or it's already Christmas.
Yeah.
Because that whole perception of time has changed, and I think it's something to do with these contrasts in how in your life and how those different feelings pop up. And sometimes you're just coasting all the time, so you don't see any differences.
Yeah, we found that over the years with retreat, exactly that time really, really slows down. So people believe they've been there for 2 or 3 weeks by the end of a week. There's another phenomenon on retreat, which I think is one of the most healing things for the kind of retreats we do, and I'm guessing for what you're doing. One of the most healing things that I think anybody ever gets is seeing that other people are going through the kind of thing that they're going through, which is why your kind of openness to the vulnerability around entrepreneurship and the business world to it has its difficulties, it has its difficult side, it's hard, and it's okay to express that, is really powerful, because everybody's going through very similar stuff, but not everybody's saying it.
And that's the thing the problem I have with the hustle culture is that it's just about pushing through, grinning and bearing it. And this, I think this sense of how it makes other people feel is like, am I supposed to just do it and not feel shit? Yeah. You know, it then feels unachievable. And I feel like actually all of this is achievable. Anyone can start their own business. Anyone can do their own thing. You know, there's very simple principles that you just need to follow. But most of the time, I believe it's a lack of vision for what I want to create and fear of failure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this whole idea that there's only one type of entrepreneur, I'm shifting away from that belief. There's definitely one type of entrepreneur that's being celebrated. Mm-hmm. And made the pinup, but I don't think that's all. That is the only way you can do it.
Well, it goes back to the idea of the lifestyle entrepreneur, doesn't it? You know, I remember when we started, there was a lot of criticism came our way from people that we knew in the startup world or the tech world. They'd be like, "Are you helping people run lifestyle businesses? Ah, okay. You know, like you're not playing big. And it's like, well, the more we dug into it, the more it's like, well, every business is a lifestyle business.
Yeah.
It depends on what kind of lifestyle you want, right?
Yeah.
We have a couple of questions. And if anyone has any other questions, please feel free to post them in into the question feature. Or, yeah, if you have any thoughts or comments, please share them in the chat. So let's start off with a question from Dan. As I understand it, acceptance is an act of grace. Any effort we make to will acceptance is usually conditional along the lines of, I accept this so that it will change. So could you say more about how you support people in their journey of acceptance? Whoa, crunchy.
I like that because it's probably true for people that they try to accept with some conditionality to it. If I accept it, this is going to happen. I'm going to feel better. Acceptance is a really difficult subject because most of us end up thinking it is quite a passive thing and that it's related to being peaceful around stuff. But proper acceptance is totally radical because acceptance is the acceptance of everything. And you get, again, almost anywhere you go on this subject, you get into sticky territory. So it only kind of works if you practice it and try it out. But there's kind of different levels of acceptance. So a kind of more passive acceptance you can start with. It's like, okay, I won't shout at the person that just beeped me on the street. I'll accept how that is. I'll accept how that is. But it can easily go into the passive direction. But the kind of acceptance of the wider thing, which is I am all these things, including pissed off, angry, you then get into whole areas of people. Well, if you accept it, you're never going to change, are you? Acceptance is a really difficult one because you hit issues along the way or in almost any direction you go. But the ability, you can kind of just tell it in people. The people who accept more, you can see it and you can feel the difference in yourself as well. I can tell when I'm at a higher level acceptance or a low level acceptance. And low-level acceptance is rather akin to passivity and kind of rolling over a bit too much.
There's it seems very meta, particularly in the way this question is phrased, and what comes up for me is like, you need to accept that acceptance might not work, because then you've accepted it.
Yeah,
we'll just say fuck it.
Yeah,
definitely fuck it. Yeah, sorry if we haven't fully answered that question, Dan, but that was an attempt there, but I think John nailed it on the head quite well.
It was like a whole week retreats needed for that one.
Well, we have spent days and days talking about it, and that's why my experience is that it takes you in down different avenues. I wrote a book. The last book I wrote actually was called "Fuck It, Be at Peace with Life, Just as It Is," which is about acceptance, and it is about these different levels, and the highest level of being at peace. It's almost easier to say about the peace thing. The highest level of being at peace with stuff is when you can be all over the shop and you can be angry and you can be reactive, but there's a level of you that's okay with it. So it's almost one of the best ways to imagine it is almost like a parent. So a parent with a child, because it's easy to imagine as we've got children, we're more okay with our kids doing lots of different stuff and being naughty or doing that or messing up or failing in this or that, whatever it would be. So there's an okayness that we have as a parent around the vast variety of activities of our kids. And so this can be the same thing, that there's some level of okayness around both how we are as people and how the world is, like a nice benign parent looking on.
I love that analogy, because the thing that springs to mind is the idea of unconditional love. It's like, no matter what you do, no matter how much you fuck up, I'm still gonna love you, and I'm gonna be okay with you.
That's acceptance. Well, unconditional okayness.
Unconditional okayness.
I'm not happy about it, but I'm okay with it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. I'm fucking angry, but
I'm disappointed. My mum's still a word. Oh, that's quite the worst, isn't it? I'd rather be angry than disappointed.
Yeah, it's true.
You've let me down.
Cool. Okay.
There's lines. I'm gonna throw another line in.
Go for it.
If your mother was disappointed, my mum very sweetly would say about most things, you know, as long as you do your best. As long as you do your best. And it felt really sweet, because it's like, you don't have to be top of the class, but as long as you could be bottom of the class, but as long as you do your best. But it created a perfectionist in me.
Yeah.
So as long as I do, but it's bloody, I mean, doing your best all the time is very tiring.
Exhausting, yeah.
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 Maybe it should have been, as long as you do your best and it doesn't matter if you come last. Or maybe that's even a double whammy.
I don't know where I'd have been there. What a I'd have been a perennial perfectionist loser.
That sounds like a title for a new book there.
As long as you didn't say give it 110%. That's like my pet hate that one. Doesn't actually make sense anyway.
Okay, we have another question here. What risk is there that fuck it can descend into nihilism or even hedonism, i.e. no regard from the fallout from this, to hell with the consequences attitude?
I've not seen it yet. I've been teaching it for 15 years. So the way I would talk about it, really. In fact, this is an analogy that's come up recently for me. Fuck it is a tool. And if you imagine, it can be used in two ways. In the Taoist terms, yin or yang. So you can use fuck it to kind of let go and slow things down, or you can use fuck it in the opposite way, which is kind of get moving. So it's a bit like a car, and driving along in the car, and the fuck it, for most of us, are driving too fast. So we need the brake to slow down a bit. So that's the fuck it brake. And we usually need to slow things down. And other times we need to get things moving. And that's when we need the fuck it accelerator. So you go, fuck it, I can do this. Fuck it, I'll face the fear. Fuck it, I'll get moving. Fuck it, I'll take the risk. So there's those two things. The one problem can be that you're actually in the wrong car with this one. So sometimes you have to completely slow the car down. So say fuck it, until you slowed everything down, you downsize whatever it is, and relax a lot. And then you realize you're in the wrong car. The wrong car is kind of an adapted you. This is more my wife's work, Gaia's work, which is I'm not myself. I'm doing this for other people. I'm a perfectionist because of that. I'm a people pleaser because of that. I'm a superwoman because of that. That I was taught when I was a kid. I was taught to do my best. At that point, you have to go, okay, what's underneath? What do I really want? What's the real me? And that's when you get out of that car and you get in another car that's maybe a slower car.
Or bicycle. And then,
or bicycle, yeah, at the moment. Yeah, not public transport. So it's a bicycle or walking. Well, you use the bicycle because it's got brakes and pedals. And then you've got fuck it. And fuck it is then powerful for a variety of reasons, but it's powerful in helping you slow down because you're putting aside all the things that are keeping you going at that speed. And it's powerful to get you going faster because you're putting aside the things that are stopping you going faster, the fear and whatever it is. So that's how it works. So back to the question about hedonism and nihilism. Hedonism, I'd invite people, and they used to have these questions years ago, at the beginning it used to happen a lot, where people would say, well, why would I just sit on the sofa watching, you know, Netflix, bit kind of lockdown life. That was what people were anticipating. Sit on the sofa eating pizza. I'm just going to get fat and I'll never do anything. And if I say fuck it to everything, I'll never do anything. And so I'd say, please just go away and do what you've just said and see what happens. And invariably what people do is if they did it, they go away. I know what happened to me. I'd watch, because I do this occasionally. I'd eat lots of pizza and cake and watch Netflix for a few days. And then I'd be so utterly bored, frustrated with the experience and the fact that I couldn't get off the sofa, that I'd then start running and I'd set up a new business and I'd borrow another £1 million to do something. So this thing of like, oh, I'm just going to end up there. You try it, you then go, woof, and you get some kind of balance back to your life and you find out what you actually want to do. If we're scared that if we don't work so hard, we'd just be really lazy, never do anything, try being lazy, not doing anything, see what happens. We're trying to find the natural life in us, really. And that's the answer to the nihilism thing as well. Can I briefly explain this?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The nihilism, it's interesting this. I think it's the fear of nihilism. It's the fear that nothing matters, which is possibly, you know, that there's no overall meaning to this. That's possibly the reality. That's possibly a fact. And it's our attempt to run away from this potential fact that forces us to create multiple meanings in our lives, through our lives. So we don't tend to have it as kids, but as we're getting older, it's like, what matters is this, what matters is my job, what matters is my sense of purpose, what matters is helping people, what matters is my health, I have to look after my kids, it means having a legacy, it means doing something in the world, whatever. And this gets bigger and bigger and bigger until this massive amount of meaning is sitting on our shoulders and then burns us out or makes us livid when somebody crosses some ethical barrier, some idea that we have, some concept is there. So we're so interested in things becoming meaningful because we're scared of the fact that there might be no meaning, that our lives become meaningful, full of meaning that fuck us over. Because every meaning has the potential for pain. Any care, anything we care about has the potential for pain for us. I care about my boys. They are living, breathing potentials for pain for me. Well, that's what our children are. You know, you don't know real potential for pain until you have kids, really. It's like, oh, shit, no. So you put stuff around them, but it's just, and that's it. I'm not going to get rid of that potential. I'm not going to reduce that meaning about my kids. I can work with it. But to go back to the thing, it's interesting about the nihilism because we've come from a fear of the no meaning into too much meaning. And so to say fuck it, I wrote an e-book that we give away, which is called Fuck It, It Doesn't Matter So Much. And so liberty and freedom can come from realizing, as we do when shit happens, actually, when we realize it's not so important. You know, it's like all of us who had our forecasts and plans for the year and the detailed marketing schedules, it's like, what? It's gone. I mean, it doesn't matter so much. This is what, and that allows you to get pissed, but this is what matters. And in my experience, when we allow that life back in, we know we don't get to the point where it's like, oh God, nothing matters. There's that a natural vivacity when you let go and open.
That idea of just radical acceptance that nothing matters, but then countering that with, I feel like still having compassion for what's going on and the people around you. No, it isn't necessarily for me just giving up and it's all pointless. It's just, I think back to where you were talking about fear, just not attached to all of this having to be a certain way, but not slipping into, oh, I don't care anymore. You still need to care. Just don't have to care.
Well, have a go not caring. You want it. I mean, it's a bit like sitting on the sofa, eat the pizza. Have a go not caring.
Yeah.
If you have a go not caring, you're going to find that there's bits of care that pop out no matter what. And that's called perspective.
Mm.
Yeah. Or
too much pizza.
Cool. Well, there's a couple of things here. Firstly, we've got Jessie. She wants to know, what books do you recommend that can help with handling fear? And then there was someone, as she asked before, which of your books is the best one to start with?
The second question first. The first book I wrote was Fuck It, The Ultimate Spiritual Way, which I wrote in that time when I kind of discovered it. And it's full. That book is full of life. It's full of, for fuck's sake, just live, just come on. It's like, there's a relaxing nature to it, but there's also a kind of, we're alive, this is amazing. And so that's a good one to start with. And about fear, I don't know. Do you know any other authors that are writing interesting stuff about fear? I've just read one, but I can't talk about it because it's not published.
A few people have been reading The War of Art on our program and seem to get value from it. It talks a lot about resistance for creative types.
Yeah.
And fear. I'm sure Mark Manson does, but lots of people don't like him, so.
Cool.
I mean, the classic is Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's... I haven't actually read the book. It's one of those that gave it away in the title, I think, too much.
There's a day, yeah, that is a criticism I face myself. I've written 6 books on the subject just to try and prove that you can't just put, it's not, the answer is not just on the cover.
Cool. We got one last question here from John. Charlie, actually. When you had your fuck it moment in 2004, did you feel you could have invited it earlier? If so, how might you have done that?
That's a good question. I mean, I'd been saying variety of fuck it's before that, including leaving jobs. And so there's a quality to me which kind of gives things up and gets moving. But in terms of the health, blimey, I really don't know. I was involved in a world, you know, the holistic health, the whole idea is that you're whole. Even the word itself, they all equal things, don't they? It's whole equals well, it's wholeness and wellness, it's all in one thing. So I had a concept, which is that wholeness of me as a person was related to my health. So I had to be well and healthy in order to be. And that concept had to be attacked and destroyed in some way. So I don't know whether I could have done it myself, really. My goal and my pursuit was health. I was going for every thing I could, including moving across the world and borrowing so much money to find it. So it's one thing, one learning there is we've got to be careful of the concepts that we take on and attach ourselves to. So any concept, any idea around how life works or how we work or how we, where we'd like to go and like to be, it's worth questioning it, which is why, again, why these are very, very instructive and interesting times, because it's this virus is very good at attacking concepts and plans as well as the health and the lungs.
I get there's the idea of the healers who are looking to heal themselves and through that trying to heal others. I mean, this is an assumption here, but I feel that your work is trying to help people avoid what you went through or give them an opportunity to see these things earlier.
You're right in that one way I've described Fuck It over the years is it's an invitation to get perspective before perspective gets you. Yeah, because the most common way to get perspective, i.e. to realize that most of that shit doesn't matter and what matters is this, and this might be your family, your friends, your health, maybe your business, whatever it is, the only time we normally get that perspective is when something really terrible happens. So it's a health thing, it's a death of somebody close to us, it's a bankruptcy, whatever, it's a shit thing. So the invitation has always been with Fuck It. It's like, say fuck it on a regular basis to the stuff that doesn't, just say fuck it to the things that are causing pain, either let go of them or face them, and you're constantly introducing perspective into your life. And that's what these times are doing that. I mean, the pandemic is providing, as well as confusion, some perspective.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, John.
That's a pleasure.
If people want to dive in a bit deeper into your work, or you know, they're curious about what you just said, even this kind of invitation, where would you like to point them?
Our website, if people Google Fuck It, you come to the website, which is thefuckitlife.com. And there's a couple of things on the front page. Actually, there's put a piece up there about how we're all facing this differently on the front page about the pandemic. There's two things. One is a kind of quiz as to how fuck it you are. So it assesses how fuck it you are based on 10 questions. And there's another thing. I mentioned this free ebook, which is the Fuck It, It Doesn't Matter So Much. And there's a little sign up box on there. So that's our site. We got, and there's also a link to the Facebook thing. Books on anywhere they sell books, and the Fuck It Life site is where all our stuff is. And if we're thinking about what to do after our tough times, we're thinking about a kind of tough times insights thing. So if anybody's interested in that, as long as you're on the list, you'd find out about it, our email list.
Brilliant. Cheers, John.
And you'll be reporting in from your trip to Italy on how... doing something is not the best use of your time on the 20th of June.
But that's again a bit meta, because you're inviting people not to be online, aren't you?
Yeah, true.
That's nice though, because if I'm reporting live to nobody about how doing something is not the thing to do, and there's nothing in the way of a response because everybody's doing nothing, that's a beautiful thing.
Charles,
I'd appreciate that.
Charlie, our friend, recommended like lots of communication with people in the run up to it, and then gradually slowing down, and then nothing on the day itself. So that's kind of our plan at the moment.
That's perfect.
Yeah,
and that you've basically touching on I've never done this, but my favorite idea for a Fuck It weekend or a retreat is to set everything up and then just not to turn up, and they would learn the Fuck It lesson. Never before, but I haven't done it yet. Still to come, that one.
And just some cameras, just so you can, you know, watch them from a secret room.
Yes. And occasionally shout commands. This is the point.
Yeah.
You're getting it finally.
As it's like Lord of the Flies and they're all turning on each other.
Oh, that's PhD Fuck It.
Yeah.
Lawrence, did you want to say something about, the day of nothing?
Well, I should say nothing, but I will say something. It's a silly project, really. It actually came out of one of these conversations with Lawrence Shorter, who wrote The Lazy Guru a couple of weeks ago. And I think we did a 5-minute bit of nothing on the call. And that was probably the best bit. Not that the call wasn't great, but people just seemed to like the idea of just being told to do nothing. So essentially it's a whole day of that in June. And we released it last week. It's already had a bit of interest. Yeah, dayofnothing.co. And you can sign up. And there's going to be a supporting book from a bunch of people in the community who are going to contribute to it. And yeah, just seeing where it goes, really. The idea is just to get people to stop for a day and switch off Zoom and Crowdcast and literally do what they want to on a day of nothing for themselves.
Cool.
But you're charging for it. You are charging for it.
Oh, it's £1,000 entry, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's...
Confiscating everyone's phones at the door of this book. This festival.
Money for nothing, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go. We've started a playlist and it's already getting...
Do you want to do that chapter, John?
I will, yeah.
Money for nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be great to get all of your support if you believe in this idea of it. And I think it links very much to what we're talking about today, is like when you do stop some of this stuff that pops up, and hopefully the conversation we had will help with when you do nothing, how to deal with this, the some things that come up. Talking about kind of stuff that you can't control, accepting things, basically rolling with uncertainty. Next Tuesday, I'm going to be talking to Christian Bush, Dr. Christian Bush, who wrote, who's publishing a book called The Serendipity Mindset. So if you're interested in how serendipity can play a positive role in your life, and you've got some questions around that, essentially, how do you make your own luck? Please join me next Tuesday at 3 p.m. here on Crowdcast. And then, of course, next Friday, we've got Sanderson Jones. That's going to be quiet. So for those of you who don't know Sanderson, yeah, he is the founder of one of the co-founders of the Sunday Assembly, and also an organization around lifefulness. So you'll find out more about that. And I'm essentially just probably spend your time listening to Sanders and tell jokes and rip the piss out of me and Lawrence. So turn up to that. It'll be a bit of comedy and a bit of deepness and probably lots of loudness.
With a pretense of a theme.
With a pretense of a theme. So great. Thanks very much again, John.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Lovely to be with you and everybody today. Yeah,
thanks everyone for joining us, and have a great weekend.
See everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Entrepreneur podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Also, if you'd like to learn more about being a happy entrepreneur and want to connect with more people like you, then go to our website, thehappystartupschool.com, and subscribe to our newsletter. Amongst many other things about business and life, we'll help you answer the following questions. How can I serve others by being myself? And how can I discover who I really am by serving others?